for anything. Just so that I can know that I know that you were with me throughout the night. Do you remember anything?
So you went to Iran without me yesterday. Okay, it's fine.
Let's not get into it, but it is medical health file. We are speaking about cervical cancer with specialist surgeon Dr. Fatima Hussain of the Apple State, Hussain and Associates. And now I know that you guys know Doctor. She's no stranger. It's just that she is in studio and we are very excited, aren't we, Khalid?
We're very excited, you know, and today we're focusing on a critical issue that impacts the health of women across South Africa. Cervical cancer. Alarmingly, it is the second most common cancer among women in our country, with a staggering 50.5% increase in deaths due to cervical cancer between 2008 and 2018, according to Stats SA. These statistics underscore the urgent need for greater awareness and proactive measures to combat this disease.
Indeed. Just thinking about cancer in itself, it's devastating. But to help us understand the gravity of the situation and the importance of regular screening, we are joined by specialist surgeon Dr. Fatima Hussain. And she's going to be helping us as she is at the forefront of advocating for women's health and raising awareness about cervical cancer. And today she will share her expertise on the subject and discuss what can be done to reverse this concerning trend. Dr. Hussain, assalamu alaikum. Welcome and welcome. I feel like we need a drum roll, Ahmed. Is there no drum roll in the back? No. For myself, just because I'm so excited to have you.
Alaikum salam, Farida. I'm so blessed and happy to be here this evening. And to Khalid, assalamu alaikum. And thank you for having me in studio today.
Shukran for being with us. Dr. Hussain, I mean, we've been having conversations around cancer. And we know that... always those conversations are hard to have and very difficult for myself to understand. And even perhaps for listeners who feel that what is cancer if they have no relation to it and just hearing it for the first time. So these statistics on cervical cancer in South Africa are quite alarming. I would think that I know that with the work around cancer that there are measures and steps being taken to sort of prevent it. So could you help us understand what might be contributing to the significant rise in deaths due to cervical cancer?
I think in South Africa, the biggest contributor to people contracting cervical cancer and for them passing away as a result thereof is its close relation of human papilloma virus or the HPV virus with the HIV virus. So HIV generally causes the immunosuppression, and the HPV then can cause the cervix cancer, and the body doesn't have a really good way to to fight or to fend for itself, which results in a rapid progression and often the patient demising from the disease. And the reason why we link the two is because both HIV and HPV are both sexually transmitted. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people, especially Muslim people, we tend not to like to talk about sex, and we don't really like to acknowledge that our youth or our community is engaging in the act of sexual intercourse. It's something still that is a taboo topic predominantly. And I think it's something that is very important that we acknowledge is happening, not always within the constraints that were advocated by our Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And therefore, we do actually in our communities our own communities and obviously communities at large have HIV and HPV exposure, and we must just acknowledge that so that we can take the measures that are required to intervene on them.
So that would mean that our community needs to wake up to the realities of people having unprotected sex and sex out of marriage, and then also the consequences of that. But irrespective of the consequences, the reality is that HIV and HPV does come through being intimate with someone. So then are we saying that we before we even get to cervical cancer, we need to have the sex talk, as they would say?
Absolutely. And I think we, I've had it in my own family where we've had debates about how to discuss it with our kids, or whether it should even be discussed with our kids. And I think it's something that makes me, I'm one of those people that are very open. Even if it's not necessarily happening, we must try and prepare our children for the risks that they may take. So if God forbid, they do make mistakes, which are inherent for young people, different children make different mistakes. We can only hope that ours don't make the mistakes that you try and teach them not to make. Mm-hmm. But if you give them the skills and the knowledge of what can happen, and you have these talks with them, I think it gives you that openness and allows them to make the decisions to help themselves if required and when required. But it does start with openness, absolutely, and to acknowledge that these things are actually happening.
So regular screening is often highlighted, you know, as a key preventive measure. Could you sort of explain the different types of screening available, such as the pap smears and HPV tests, and how often women should be getting them?
So there's a HPV test. So that's an kind of like an assay which tests for the HPV virus itself. So that essentially, or the high risk variants of the HPV, there's lots of different ones. The HPV 16 and 18 are the ones that are specifically related to cervix cancer. And that's what the HPV test for. And you, I think international guidelines suggest that you can do the HPV test after the age of 30. You can do it every 5 years, especially you should do it if you are sexually active. Or you can do a pap smear. And a pap smear is actually like a test where they look at the cells that are in the cervix, around the cervix, and see if those are abnormal. So it actually looks at abnormal cells, or looks for abnormal cells, that occurs as a result of the changes that happen, because of HPV infection. And, that should be done every 3 years. So, interesting that Khalid, that you mentioned that about the HPV and the test and the pap smear. Those are secondary kind of prevention. So that is once the person is already sexually active, that you can get tested at those specific intervals, 5 years or 3 years, to look for the effects of the HPV virus. But there is primary prevention, which is one of the things that I absolutely love about where we are in the space regarding cervix cancer, because unlike many other cancers, we can actually prevent it from happening at all. We can prevent it, and that comes in the form of the HPV vaccine, which is now being offered at schools as part of the South African vaccination program from the age of 12.
I'm glad you emphasize, you know, on the importance of those screening. You know, despite the importance of screening, many women do not go for regular checkups. What are some of the common barriers preventing women from accessing these services, and how can we overcome them?
So the first thing is that we don't talk about it. It's never going to happen to us, of course. I have one partner. I've only had this guy for my whole life, and I trust him absolutely and completely, and it will never happen to me. So that doesn't really work that way. You trust yourself. You don't always know what your partner is doing. Alhamdulillah, many of us are in very monogamous relationships, and some of us are not, unfortunately. We don't know that we are not, but we may be in such a relationship. And therefore, as soon as you become sexually active, your health becomes your own responsibility. Mm-hmm. And you should go for cervical cancer screening. Again, this comes with the acknowledgement that this can happen to you. Mm-hmm. And it's not about it. It's not about trust or not trusting in your partner or whatever. It's about just doing the right thing and making sure that you get well taken care of. So that's one of the big barriers. And the other barriers is that a lot of people go for it once. They don't like the experience. It's very uncomfortable. It requires a lot of exposure. People have to show their nether regions to the doctor, and people don't really like that. So they don't really want to go for these tests. I'm sorry, Khalid, looking a little bit uncomfortable there. but it's something that does, it's not just you, it's a lot of women out there. They don't want to because they don't like that experience. But of course, it's a necessary evil. And it's only something that has to happen every 3 years if you do it. And remember, it can pick up the disease in the very early stages, when it's in the precancerous phase, thus preventing you from requiring radiation and chemo. Those words don't ever have to get used.
Yeah, I think it's really important. And I mean, we talk about screening, and I smiled when you said, you know, girls from the ages of 12, because I remember last year or the year before, it was really a tricky situation because, in particular, Muslim parents are feeling like, no, why should my daughter have this vaccine? And my thinking is prevention is better than a cure. And those invasive procedures and it's uncomfortable. It's not the best thing. I think if there was a way that one could look at one's toe, for example, I'm sure the doctors would find a way to do so. But it is in your private space and area, and so it has to happen. But I know that you've emphasized on, you know, the need for increased awareness, because I think if it can be prevented, and you have the opportunity to live, then choose life. But what are some of the critical facts about cervical cancer that women just don't get or don't seem to understand? I know you mentioned trust is the one thing where women feel like, oh, I trust my partner and it won't happen to me. What are the other things that we just don't understand about cervical cancer?
I think there's one of the things is that people don't just develop it. It's not something that just happens. Wow, I don't have cancer today, and tomorrow I have it. It's something that develops. It's a multitude of changes that happened within the cells of the cervix. And I'm saying HPV because it's the most common cause. It's not the only cause, I must just point out. though the infection, the depressed immune system, the various drugs, exposure to different things, obesity, smoking, all of those things, those stimulate those changes within the cells. And as the cells become more and more abnormal, then slowly they become abnormal. I would say there's like a critical point where the abnormality becomes aggressive and very invasive, and that is a cancer. So if you get it at that beginning phase where the cells are abnormal but they're not invasive, one can actually remove it completely or address the issue completely without having to require the invasive treatments or the treatments that actually make us afraid of the word, the big C word, the cancer word, those big operations where you get a hysterectomy and those big operations, those big words like chemotherapy, and you think of, see your hair falling out, and radiation therapy, all of those things that we don't like to hear about. If we understand that we can address this issue and that's why we want people to do screening, then I think it changes the entire landscape of how the disease gets managed, how patients present. We can actually change the face of how people look at cancer, or cervix cancer in particular. But and it starts off with understanding why we want you to do screening. It's actually to prevent the ugly C word. I think that's one of the things that we don't really understand about cancer, that it's that change. And everybody thinks cancer is related to genetics. Okay, my mother didn't get it, so I'm not going to get it. But I've been saying over and over again that cervix cancer is very much associated with HPV and HIV. I mean, the vast majority, over 80% of it, is related to that. Smoking, obesity, certain drugs, they can contribute to it. But only 2 to 3%, less than 5% of all cervix cancers is actually genetic related, which is an extremely small percentage. So if your mother didn't get it, it doesn't mean you're not going to get it.
I wonder how do you then, because I'm, so yes, the one part is the sex talk with young girls. And then the other part is trying to explain HPV and HIV to a 12-year-old and saying, listen, this is a vaccine that is supposed to protect you. These are the things that can happen. Should you, make a mistake, as you say, then this, I'm not encouraging unprotected sex. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, how do you have a conversation with a 12-year-old in order for them to understand and also then honor their bodies and not make mistakes?
I think the first assumption is that we think that they don't know anything. Mm. Big mistake. They know a lot. They've been talking to all their friends who've been talking to their friends who've been talking to their bigger sisters and their aunts and listening in. So they know quite a bit about sex and the various diseases and things like that. Maybe not all the diseases, but then do people talk about their bad experiences? Nobody's going to tell you they have chlamydia or HPV. Mm-hmm. They're going to tell you about the fun they had, yeah, if that, or that sort of thing. They're not going to tell you the bad stuff. So that's where you come in. You can always start, I suppose you can start with a conversation of, what do you know already? And let's be open about this. I mean, I can fill in the blanks for you.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the risks. Let's talk about the benefits. Let's talk about what Islam says about this and why Islam says this about it. Mm. Because I think the way our religion has put it for us actually prevents so many of these things. Mm. It actually does make things a lot better and a lot easier, and it can help your child make the right decisions. Mm. Explaining to them the why this whole thing's happened. And I think it's always important that you explain to them how to troubleshoot. So if this happens, because remember, not all sex is consensual.
Yes, indeed.
And it's not just the girls. Mm. We tend to think that this is a girl problem. When you talk cervix cancer, you think this is a girl problem. Mm. But HPV is carried by males as well. So where do the girls get it from? They're not getting it from each other. They're getting it from the guy.
Yeah.
So we tend to think that the guy doesn't need to get vaccinated, but actually he does. We don't have to have this conversation with the boy, but we do. Because he's the one that's going to give it to his wife. Mm. Because he's participating in the sexual activity during his youth and may not realize the consequence later in life when he decides to get married, settle down. Mm. Mm. So there are long-term effects of the decisions we make when we're young. So, yeah.
There's a listener asking for what is the clinical indications of cervical cancer. But I also, just before you answer that question, doctor, I was having a conversation with my producer and I was saying, I'm frustrated with HPV. I'm frustrated that it's coming from the other party, you know, because I'm saying I'm protecting myself and I'm doing all the right things, and then you, another human being, and you infect me, and I feel like it's unfair, and I was complaining about it. But I think it's very important that you mention, when we are having this conversation with 12-year-old girls, you are having the same conversation with 12-year-old boys, because I think the vaccine conversation is so to put it bluntly, shove down the girl's side. And so she must do all the protecting, but yet the one who carries it freely. So that, I'm just saying that it's unfair, but please, if you could share your thoughts on that and also just the clinical indications for cervical cancer.
So sorry to disappoint you, but the vast majority is actually asymptomatic until it becomes a problem, which is why we want you to get screening. Screening is very important. So it really doesn't present as much. It can present for a while until it is quite a significant mass. It's generally painless, so doesn't really present with pain. It can present with a discharge, usually a foul-smelling discharge. And when I mean foul-smelling, it really does not smell. It's very malodorous, if I may put it that way. It's not a good smell. Any doctor who's dealt with cervix cancer knows there's a specific scent that it comes with. It presents with, can have lymph nodes in the groin. These are little like bumps or round lumps that you feel in your, where your hip joint is. You can feel it even there in the groin area. over there. It can present with a little bit of blood. So a bloody discharge as well. And of course, a mass. That's usually quite a late sign, when you start developing a mass that you are able to palpate. It can also present with painful sex. So if the sex is really painful, you really need to go and see your gynae to try and figure out why. We call that something called dyspareunia. Or especially in the beginning phases, you may actually have bleeding after participating in sexual intercourse. It can be as a result of stimulation of that very tender area where the cancer is growing. So again, if you're bleeding frequently after sexual intercourse, go and have a checkup with your gynae.
That jingle in the background is our indication that we just need to take a short breather. I know it's an intense discussion that we're having, but it is 100.4 FM. Do send in your messages on 0786101112.
Reliable access to clean water could save thousands of lives each day with